I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about how young people should think about and plan their educations, their careers, and ultimately, their hopes for their lives. My guest is Vince Bertram, President and Chief Executive Officer of Project Lead the Way. He's also the author of a new book, Dream Differently, Candid Advice for America's Students. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking with my guest, Vince Bertram. He is the CEO, president of Project Lead the Way. He's also the author of a new book that is published just today. It's called Dream Differently, Candid Advice for America's Students. More broadly, we're going to be talking about really how young people should be thinking about their educations, their careers, perhaps their lives. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, I'd like to welcome now Vince Bertram as our guest to the show. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So let's talk. It seems to me we have there are two ways we have to sort of set this conversation. One, we probably ought to. We're going to talk a lot about the book and its themes, which I found pretty straightforward. And thank you for the advance copy so I could read it before we went on the air. But we probably ought to talk about what Project Lead the Way is first, because the book, in many ways, is an outgrowth of what you're trying to do there.
Yes, thank you. Project Lead the Way is the nation's leading provider of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics curriculum for K-12 schools. So we operate this past school year in nearly 10,000 schools, over 3 million students. We also train teachers in how to teach in a project-based classroom that brings real-world applications to students that allow them to apply math and science in relevant ways. And we also work with dozens of employers across the country who are recruiting our students, as well as many colleges and universities. PLTW was, when I became CEO in 2011, we were actually headquartered in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. And we moved the company to Indianapolis in 2011 and have grown from 30 people to over 200, and really now the nation's leading provider of STEM curriculum for schools.
How many different schools do you work with? I mean, I know I looked at your website and went to the handy little map function, and Indiana's pretty much covered. I mean,
yes.
There are very few places that you're not working with a school.
Yes, and we're in all 50 states, in the District of Columbia, and now in U.S. territories, and nearly 10,000 schools this past school year. So we are growing rapidly, over 30% year-over-year growth. And schools are adopting PLTW because we're getting great outcomes. Our students are going on to higher education. They're going into STEM careers. And they're outperforming in a significant way their non-PLTW peers. So really for us, this is about career learning. It's about the workforce and America's economy.
What sorts of things, when you say that you're the largest provider, what are the sorts of things that you provide? Could you talk about some concrete examples?
Yeah, we develop all of the curriculum for our courses. So it varies based on grade level. But for instance, in our elementary program, we provide modules that align with mathematics and science standards. So as students are learning mathematics and science concepts, they actually get to apply those concepts in real-world applications. We develop all those activities, and we train teachers on how to deliver that kind of content. In middle school, we start to get into full 9-week courses around things in our pathways in engineering, biomedical science, and computer science. And they move on to high school where we have full-year courses in all three of those pathways. So students can go through their entire K-12 experience really focused on engineering, biomedical science, or computer science, or a combination of those programs.
You say, how old is Project Lead the Way?
This is our 20th anniversary.
20th year. And you say that you were based in upstate New York until 2011?
That is correct.
What prompted you to move here to Indiana? Was it just to make you feel at home since you'd served in Evansville as the superintendent and all of that?
Yeah, great question. I think there are a number of things. One is Indiana is a great place to do business. And having grown up in Indiana, I recognize that and all the things that are happening here. It's just a vibrant place. And we also believe that it was a great place for us to recruit talent. You know, upstate New York was a challenge for us. So as we wanted to grow and we're really thinking about that trajectory and our ability to attract talent, we wanted to be in a place that allowed us to do that. The other thing is, you know, Mitch Daniels at the time was governor of our state and reached out to us right away and offered the state's support in moving PLTW. And Mayor Ballard was very supportive, and those groups came together, the Indiana Economic Development Corporation and others, and were very supportive and really helped provide incentives and others for us to move. Our board reacted very favorably, and we moved very quickly. I became CEO officially in June, and by September, our board had voted to move, and by December, we were fully operational in Indianapolis. But it really was a great move for us and has proven to be very beneficial.
Where were you in upstate before?
We were in Clifton Park.
Okay.
About 30 miles north of Albany.
Okay. Okay. Right there on the Northway.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, the winters are probably just a little bit milder here too, which has something to say for it.
Sure.
So out of this, let's talk a little bit about the genesis of the book. What prompted you to write Dream Differently?
Yeah, there are a number of things. One is just a general concern about our economy. I see, even as we see STEM jobs growing at 2 times the rate of non-STEM jobs, we see a lot of opportunity. We see economic premiums being paid and STEM-related jobs, yet we have fewer students going into those careers. And this book is not about directing them or leading them into STEM careers. I make that very clear in the book. Mm-hmm. But as I think about this disconnect, and we often hear about the skills gap that persists in the United States and other countries for that matter, I'm concerned about people who are unemployed, people who are underemployed, and also recognizing we have one of the lowest workforce participation rates since the 1970s. People who have just been discouraged and have dropped out of the workforce are no longer seeking work. And I want to do everything possible to ensure our students avoid some of those dead ends. And as I think about the skills they need to thrive in this global economy, you know, we are responsible for that in our education system. We have to ensure that they have the knowledge and skills so they can compete and they can thrive. And but there's some fundamental issue here that really drove me to this is what kind of advice are we giving our students? Are we giving them candid advice? Are we misleading them in certain ways? Are we giving them enough advice? And then are students developing the skills they need early on to ensure that they are more likely to have thriving opportunities? So I'll give you a couple of examples. You know, historically, and we hear this all the time, you know, students will be told, you know, are asked, what are you good at? And they tell them what they're good at, and they say, okay, you should pursue these kind of careers because you're good at this. The reality is you're good at things that you've practiced and you feel comfortable with. It doesn't mean you can't get good at other things. Mm-hmm. So rather than just picking something because you believe you have this innate talent or something you've gravitated to, that is the limitation, that is very limiting for our students. And then we give them irrational advice by saying, just follow your dreams and everything will work out. The reality is that's not true. It doesn't work that way. Students need skills. People and employers really don't care about what our dreams are. They care about what we can do. and the skills we have. And that's our obligation. That was really the basis, is the basis of the book and what motivated me to write it.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed that as I read it, and I cannot remember the young man's name, but he's the one you visit a couple of sort of allegorical almost students who have gone on career paths. This young man comes from a family of engineers, and you know, so he's sort of on this preordained course, but he's not naturally gifted at math like the other members of his family were. And you make the point ultimately that he doesn't have to be supremely gifted at math. He merely has to be competent to do the kinds of things that he needs to do.
Yeah, so you're talking about Mark. Mark mm-hmm. works for Lockheed Martin, mm-hmm. and he's making some of the world's most sophisticated aircraft mm-hmm. and working with one of the largest defense contractors in the world. And your point is he didn't think he was that good at math and really struggled with math, but he continued to and persisted. And today he has a great career at a great company. But the point you made is that sometimes students, you know, they're discouraged at a very early age. In fact, we know from years of research that students make decisions whether they're good in math and science as early as second grade. So think about a student in late elementary, middle school, who believes she's not good at math. Mm-hmm. It's unlikely that she's going to pursue any kind of career that will require her to do math.
Mm-hmm.
And we just think that is a social injustice, that we have to make sure that students understand, one, that they can get and become competent in math and science, but secondly, you don't have to solve, you know, the next big mathematical problem facing the universe. The reality mm-hmm. is you have to be competent at some pretty high-level math, but that takes persistence and practice. It's not that you're born with these mathematical skills. The reality is you can practice and get good at it. I mean, think about this, and I use this as an example for students. You know, no student, you know, is born knowing how to play the piano
mm-hmm.
or play a guitar or play sports. Some may have some abilities that help them, mm-hmm. but the reality is you can be a great athlete and not be very good at basketball. You have to practice basketball. You have to practice the piano. But we have to give our students the tools that allow them to get good at those respective sports or activities. And the same is true here. They can practice and get good at it, but we have to inspire them. We have to help build those connections from our elementary, middle, and high school experience to real-world applications. We have to make learning relevant for our students. If they understand the kind of technology that's necessary to do certain type of careers or the kind of skills they're going to need, we believe it will inspire them to do better while they're in school.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with Vince Bertram. He is the president and CEO of Project Lead the Way, about his new book just published today, Dream Differently. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Andy has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Andy, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to call in and, I guess, say thank you, actually. I took Project Lead the Way classes back in high school, and this was starting in 2004 through 2008. And this is in Greenfield over on the outskirts of Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. If it hadn't been for Project Lead the Way, I don't think I would have gone into engineering. I ended up going to Purdue University only because I actually realized that I could do that stuff through Project Lead the Way. So it really affected the entire course of my life. And I know it did with a bunch of other people, other classmates. So I just wanted to say to thank you for that and for the whole program.
Well, thanks very much for the call and for sharing your story, Andy. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Certainly. That's got to feel good to hear.
Yes, and Andy just mentioned, and again, thank you, Andy, for the call, and we're excited that you're doing very well. Thank you. And also, he mentioned Greenfield Central High School, which mm-hmm. has a great PLTW program and has been really a long-term model for PLTW, and it's a place I have visited, and students and teachers are doing a great job there.
So when you say that you provide the curriculum, what does that consist of, and how do you help them implement it?
We provide all the resources for them. So from the very beginning of a class, so for instance, one of our first courses in engineering is Introduction to Engineering Design. So we start by teaching the design process. We take them through, you know, so we have lessons designed every day throughout the school year. And then we have activities and projects that they will provide students throughout the course of a year. So students are learning content at the same time they're applying that content. They're making things, they're building, they're designing, and they're doing it with sophisticated tools such as Autodesk Inventor, which is industry standard software. So we do that for each of our courses. So students have access to courses throughout their school experience.
We are talking with Vince Bertram. He is the president, CEO of Project Lead the Way and the author of the new book, Dream Differently, Candid Advice for America's Students. If you want to join the conversation, you can find us on social media. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or call us at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today with Vince Bertram. He is the CEO and president of Project Lead the Way, which is based here in Indianapolis, and the author of a new book just published today, in fact, called Dream Differently, Candid Advice for America's Students. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what our regular listener Jerry has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry writes, I am personally concerned and dismayed at the overemphasis on a STEM focus. My college degree is in comparative literature, but I earned an adequate living as a computer systems analyst. My on-the-job experience taught me that my liberal arts education was at least as important to my job performance as the purely technical learning. If one can make sense of 19th century French symbolist poetry, creating complex computer systems that actually work is comparatively easy. My literary training helped me solve problems and help others to solve problems that totally mystified colleagues whose background in STEM was much stronger than mine. I do not oppose STEM, but I think it's not enough. Please comment. Vince?
I appreciate it very much. In fact, I address this very issue in the book. It's not something that we've avoided at all. In fact, I'm very clear and I address the question around the liberal arts very specifically. I also did my first book, One Nation Undertaught, Solving America's STEM Crisis. And, you know, my take on this is really from multiple perspectives. I absolutely believe in liberal arts, but I also know what employers are hiring and the kind of degrees that are in high demand. And I want to make sure that our students have the skills necessary to take advantage of those kind of pathways. I also look at college at 120 plus credit hours for graduation. And it doesn't mean there's not room for several things. A lot of our students have majors and minors, double majors. You know, we have a general curriculum at most universities. You know, so I encourage students to take advantage of those opportunities and to learn, you know, the classics, learn other things and explore. But the other point is that a lot of times they get jobs and careers as a result of the credentials they earn in a college education that cost tens of thousands of dollars. And I want that to lead to careers and opportunities for them. But at the same time, and I make this very clear as well, that learning is a lifetime pursuit. You know, we want our students to continue to learn and explore areas of interest, whether it's the arts or music and other things. But I've never viewed STEM as something separate, but really a foundation. And we can build on top of that. But nor have I ever believed or in any way advocated for the exclusion of other disciplines. I think it is very inclusive, and I want these integrated, and I want students to have a robust, full experience, both in their K-12 as well as higher education. But I also want them to have careers, and I want them to have the skills necessary that will allow them to go into a job market where there's high demand and where they're going to differentiate themselves.
to be fair, Jerry, in some ways this answers your question too. In reading the book, Vince, you do try searching for the appropriate metaphor, and I'm only coming up with cliches, thread that needle, walk that line, or whatever, that fine line. And because you talk about how many employers, in fact, are not looking for purely technicians, that they want the soft skills, the problem-solving skills, that often the pure application of the STEM disciplines doesn't necessarily provide, and create some argument for the liberal arts. I guess what I would say is this a false choice? Increasingly it strikes a lot of us who pay attention to this stuff that the answer is not one or the other, but they need both, that the properly educated person needs both these days.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the argument I make. Mm-hmm. In this book, is that I don't believe just taking all technical skills in one area is what our students need. I think it is an integrated approach. It is a combination of things. And it's not just what happens in a 2 or 4 year period as well. For instance, I highlight an executive from Google. Mm-hmm. And I really talked with him about the hiring practice at Google and so forth. And one of the things he said to me that I was really struck by, he said that number one skill that has served him in his career at Google is his ability to write. Mm-hmm. And his ability to articulate his ideas and share them with other people in convincing, compelling ways. And I make that very clear here, that these are skills that all students need. You know, just to be able to solve mathematical equations will not be enough for them. And their ability to interact, but you know, life doesn't start and end with mm-hmm. an 8-to-5 position. Mm-hmm. You know, and people have other pursuits and other interests, and I really encourage them to do that. The question I have is, how do students think about college, the majors they pursue, the kind of opportunities available to them when they graduate? And as long as we can provide them with that kind of information and let them make informed choices, and we haven't shut off those opportunities for them in third grade because they don't think they're good at certain things, mm-hmm. then I really encourage students to pursue whatever they want. But I want them to make informed decisions, and I want us to inform them about the kind of opportunities that are actually available. When students are in high school, they just don't have experience. Even when they're in college, they don't have experience. They don't know all the things that are available to them. That's one of the reasons so many students will change careers several times. Once they get out of college.
Or majors, for that matter, while they're in college.
Exactly. Yeah. But they just don't have the experience. They don't know. And then they're attracted to certain things, or they see opportunities in there. So what we want to do is ensure that those opportunities are as broad as possible, which means that students can take a wide range of courses, but they need to be relevant courses to them. And ideally, they would graduate with a degree that will serve them well in the job market. I look at college, and people differ on this. And in fact, I go into, you know, Dr. Bloom's, one of his early works that came out several years ago around the liberal arts question and the challenge we have, and how he really believed it was being removed from the college experience. But
that's one of those books. We're talking about Alan Bloom's Closing of the American Mind, one of those books that's more often cited than read.
That is true.
But
I have paid a lot of attention to it, I think it's an important question, something that I think about often, is what does that experience look like? But here's what I do know. Mm-hmm. It's costing our children tens of thousands of dollars in an investment in education, and they should be able to get that return on their investment. Mm-hmm. And we need to be very open with them, and that's what this book is about. It's candid advice. They need to look at that from if we're going in and say we're willing to spend $150,000 just to get a degree, that's one thing, if that's a choice they make. But if they don't know that the end of that, the opportunities for them are very limited, that people with certain degrees where there's no demand for that, they need to know that as well. And they need to make informed choices.
We are talking with Vince Bertram about his new book, Dream Differently, Candid Advice for America's Students. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener has done and reach out to us via Facebook. You can find us at No Limits WFYI. This listener writes, If he could go back in time, what advice would Vince give his high school self?
Great question. You know, that's a great question. I think for me, I would have really focused a lot more in some of these areas. You know, I started my career, I was a teacher, I was a coach, and one of the things that really inspired me were many of my teachers and others who believed in me and gave me opportunities. And as I progressed through my career, my primary driver has been the ability to influence more and more children and to make a difference for them through people. But if I were to go back, I would have taken my early high school experience a lot more seriously. I don't think I got real serious about high school until my last year and a half. Mm-hmm. And that has been a regret for me, but I've continued to focus on education, but I had a great experience. I learned a lot, and, you know, I've earned 7 college degrees since then. So it's, education's just been a very important part of my life. But that's probably what I would do a little differently in high school. And I went to Blue River Valley Junior Senior High School in Mount Summit, Indiana, and just had some fabulous people in that community, in that school, who really, again, believed in me and inspired me.
We are talking with Vince Bertram about his new book, Dream Differently, Candid Advice for America's Students. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Stephanie has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Stephanie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Certainly.
I'm calling with also a concern. I share the concern that Jerry mentioned in his email.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was very eloquent, and I may be a little bit less eloquent, but I am a dance professor at IU Bloomington, and I received earned both of my degrees, my Bachelor of Fine Arts and my Master's of Fine Arts, which is a terminal degree in contemporary dance. And I have seen incredible benefits from the pursuit of these degrees. I also have friends who spent their undergraduate doing a BFA in contemporary dance, modern dance, and have gone on to medical school, to law school, to many various kinds of degrees and professions that make a lot more money than dancers do. And I will say that those people who have done that, when they've gone back to school for medicine, their background in dance has been very important, because the schools recognize the firsthand body knowledge that these people have going into the medical profession that is different than what other people have had. And I feel like while I really applaud the investment in teaching STEM materials to young students, even elementary school students, I think it is a mistake to avoid including in that the arts. And I think the acronym should be STEAM, and I want to know what you think about that.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Stephanie.
Yeah, thank you, Stephanie, and I appreciate it. And thank you for all that you do as an educator, and certainly to John as well, and your commitment to education and all the work that both of you do. One of the things that I believe, and I would really love, Stephanie, for you to read an article I wrote. It's in the Huffington Post. It's called STEM versus STEAM, We're Missing the Point. And it really, I think, captures the essence of this whole question for me. And for me, STEM has been a foundation. It's not, you know, if we try to include everything in the acronym that everyone would like, it becomes school. It becomes what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, STEM isn't the end. The STEM is the foundation. But it's kind of interesting, too. I would absolutely agree with you that if you want to be a college professor in the arts, that you should major in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go into medicine or law, there are a wide range of degrees that will allow you to get into that. But also, what happens to a student who just ends with a bachelor's degree in fine arts, and what happens to them? Yes, if they want to go on and get a PhD, there may be opportunities. If they want to go to medical school, law school, there may be opportunities. The big question is, what happens to those students if they get a college degree and that's it for them? And I actually talk about that in the book, because I think it's very important. You know, so nothing that I've written, in fact, just to the contrary, would suggest that the arts are not important. And I believe, and I was a school superintendent, is something I've, and I was a high school principal for 8 years in the state, is something I've been a strong believer in. And I just want our students to make informed decisions and make good choices about their investments. And if that choice is in the arts, then that's great. But they need to understand the paths, the opportunities available to them, the realities of the job market, and also what will happen beyond their college experience and what's necessary. So, for example, I use an example in the book. I was in a yogurt shop in Tampa, Florida, and a young lady was talking to me, and she was helping me actually with my samples, and she was in college. I went to pay, and there was a jar, and it said Jacqueline's College Fund. And I thought, well, that was clever. Mm-hmm. And so we started talking about college, and I asked her what she was majoring in. And she told me psychology. I said, great, what are you going to do with that? She said, well, I want to be a psychologist. I said, great, have you started thinking about grad school? And she looked at me like, grad school? I'm not going to grad school. And I said, well, then you're probably not going to be a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But she had no idea. That's kind of my point, is I don't have a problem with someone majoring in psychology. I have a concern if they're majoring in psychology and believing that after spending thousands of dollars for a college education, they're going to be a psychologist. That's not going to require a professional degree. They need to know that. And that's really what I'm talking about around candid advice, helping them understand. One other point I'll make, Stephanie, and I really appreciate the question, is I make several statements in here. I'm really not pushing students into STEM careers. I want them to understand the realities, and I really encourage them to take advantage of a wide range of opportunities throughout their K-12 and higher education experience.
Well, and it strikes me that we've actually touched on what I think is your book's central thesis here. I'm going to try to talk about it without giving it away, because that's really your job, is to advance the argument. You write that really that whole almost cliche that says one should follow his or her dreams, follow your dreams, is limiting, when in fact most people think of it as empowering. Could you talk about the ways that you see that it is limiting? Because I thought that was an intriguing and eye-opening way to explore that idea.
Well, it's kind of interesting when you look at, use sports as an example, or the arts. Mm-hmm. You know, a student wants to be a performer on Broadway. Well, first of all, there are just very few people who will get to perform on Broadway. So we can say just follow your dreams, and they can pursue that, and for many it's going to be a dead end. My point is, you can pursue that, but one is develop skills that will allow you to do other things. But being a professional athlete is a job.
Mm-hmm.
Being a performer is, in many cases, a job. But what if students start to understand the arts and the way that those skills can be applied to so many things that allow them to enjoy the arts, to actually participate and have a career in the arts? We may have 20 people performing on stage at Broadway and 200 people backstage doing a lot of things, from choreography to lighting, acoustics, all the things that make Broadway come to life for millions of people. And that's what I want students to see, are those kind of opportunities. Same thing in sports. You want to be a professional athlete. Well, just very, very few people ever get that chance. And even when they do, and one example I've used is professional football players. 78% of NFL players within 2 years of leaving the NFL, either through retirement, right, getting cut or injury, are in bankruptcy or under financial distress. 78%. So even those who have made it to the NFL, very few ever can spend the rest of their life without having to work again. But if you look at sports and all the careers available within the industry, then there are places for a lot of people. So pursue your dream of being on Broadway, being a professional athlete, at the same time building skills and knowledge that will allow you to work in the industry you love.
We are talking with Vince Bertram. He is the CEO and president of Project Lead the Way, which is based here in Indianapolis. He also is the author of a new book, Dream Differently, Candid Advice for America's Students, that was just published today. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today with Vince Bertram. He is the president and CEO of Indianapolis-based Project Lead the Way. He's also the author of a new book that was just published today, Dream Differently, Candid Advice for America's Students. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Art has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Art, welcome to the program.
Greetings. Upon concluding that Troy Alexander probably really was the top chemistry student in the history of the IU Bloomington Chemistry Department, I challenged him to do an experiment, to take on a teaching assignment to prove that skill plus his very, very engaging manner would have a profound impact on the kids and have them on the edge of their chairs. Troy got a job as a substitute teacher at Noblesville High School. 2 weeks later, the teacher fell ill and out for the year. And Troy began, and within a few days, the principal, vice principal, and head of the science department were looking in amazement, seeing all their students on the edge of their chairs, absolutely enthralled with what Troy was doing. Troy ignited the class, developed a passion, and all the kids did amazingly well in the class, such that the grade curve was almost flat at A minuses. We need Troy Alexanders to teach our kids, and there probably are plenty of them around the United States.
Thanks very much for the call and for sharing that story, Art. Vince?
That occurred about 2007.
Okay. Well, let me give Vince a chance to respond. Thanks very much for the call, Art.
All right, thank you very much for the call. And I agree. I think, you know, I also have the pleasure of serving on the Indiana State Board of Education, and I think as a lifetime educator, I understand the value of great teaching. And I think for all of us as a state and as a nation, we have to do a better job of, one, of inspiring people to consider teaching as a profession. We have to compensate teachers appropriately and continue to help people understand what a great profession it is. But we do. We need great teachers in every classroom in our state and across the country, and we're going to continue to do everything we can to encourage more people to go into teaching and then also help continue to inspire the ones who are already there.
We've gotten an email from a listener named David. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. David writes with two questions. With so many kids not reading hardcover books, and for that matter, their millennium generation parents not being book readers, how will you reach out and get your message from Dream Differently to the students, especially at-risk youth groups? And the second one is, how do we get the youth of today to actually see possible future jobs? An example he cites is airlines need 28,000 pilots a year for the next 20 years. Source is Boeing. When they are inside the school bubble, followed by after-school activities for most of the day.
David, great questions. Now, the first question really is around the book. And my hope was not necessarily that students would go buy a book. You know, we are more concerned about teachers, parents, guidance counselors, and others reading the book and hopefully getting ideas from it and how to counsel students and the advice that they can share with them. That's really my hope. At the same time, I am hopeful that some students will read it and be inspired by it and learn from it. But the real issue is around the people who are around them every day and will influence them. The other question really is around, you know, the career learning. PLTW in our work is really focused on this whole idea of career learning, that we have to help students understand the kind of opportunities available. You point out Boeing, you know, and pilots. You know, we work directly with Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Chevron, General Motors, Toyota, Autodesk, Google, Apple. We work with a lot of companies, and the primary reason we do is they need a skilled workforce. They need people who can go into these fields. And it's not always just, computer programmers or engineers, but people who have problem-solving, critical thinking, communication, collaboration skills. These are the skills that are very intentionally taught in our program. At the same time, we're including a lot of career awareness material, throughout this experience so that students can understand, what these skills can lead to, what kind of opportunities are available to them, and then we can help provide pathways and help them understand how they can get to those careers. Great questions. Thank you.
Got another email from a listener named Ben. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. It says, I have a quick question for your panelist. In your opinion, how much does a student's interest in a particular field hinge on how it's marketed? I remember thinking that computer programming would be a boring job, akin to Peter Gibbons' character in Office Space, or that people who pursue programming did so because they're good at it, and that in itself was good enough. Neither of these reasons would have appealed to me when I was in high school. The Mark Zuckerbergs, et cetera, of the world hadn't yet made a name for themselves when I was 16, and even today I feel as though STEM courses are still marketed to students for their great job opportunities, that is, a chance to work for someone else, instead of marketing these fields to students as a way to take the helm. There are plenty of problems to solve in the world. Maybe it would be better to engage students in STEM fields by encouraging them to solve these problems instead of treating them as a financial means to an end.
Yeah, no, I agree with most of those statements. I think for us, one is the whole entrepreneurial mindset that I really don't talk a lot about in the book, but I do talk about the entrepreneurial mindset, and where the majority of our students are going to find themselves working in companies and organizations, and the kind of skills that are necessary are those problem-solving, critical thinking, communication, collaboration skills that I alluded to earlier, the people who add value to companies in many, many ways. It's not just in coding and so forth. A lot of these things have gained popularity, and primarily because of some of the examples you mentioned. I even highlight several of those examples in the book, whether it's Mark Zuckerberg or Steve Jobs or Michael Dell or Bill Gates. I mean, people who've gone on to create massive wealth and companies, but they're in the minority, and there are very few of those kind of individuals. But one of the things that we do in all of our courses and programs is create experiences that help nurture the entrepreneurial mindset as well. And many of our students will create, build things. One of their capstone projects is to solve a real-world problem, and they do that through 3D modeling and prototyping, and they create things. So we're trying to nurture that mindset as well. So students, if they want to go off and create their own enterprise, they have the ability to do that. They know how to protect intellectual property and what it means to start a business. At the same time, they know the kind of value they can add for businesses in any career choice they make. But the most important thing for us then is helping students, again, develop the skills they need so they can thrive in that evolving world, that global economy that they're going to be faced with.
Well, and we probably, to be fair to you, your book, you also make an argument that in some ways we compartmentalize knowledge too much. You alluded earlier to the fact that just because you work at Google doesn't mean you're not going to have to learn to write and write well and effectively, that a lot of these things, rather than saying good writing is simply something that is done in the English department, really has to work across the discipline. Some knowledge of science should be across any competent curriculum. Could you address that just a little bit?
Sure. And it really goes back to the question that Stephanie asked earlier around the fine arts and so forth. And, we do believe, and if you look at the way most schools are structured, elementary schools, they'll teach reading, and then they go on to science and to PE and to health. You get into high school, departments are structured down hallways. You get to college, and it's various schools, and students just go from place to place to take a collection of courses. And for us, it's the real thinking around STEM is Earlier I mentioned the foundation, the integration of disciplines. So you go into our elementary program, for instance, in what we call Launch, and students are doing art projects, and they're doing it with technology and these STEM skills. But we're helping them understand how it connects to the arts, how we make paint and paint brushes and canvas and 3D modeling software. And all these things are manufactured. We make these things. And we help them understand how those skills will and how they apply. At the same time, then they're also learning the art, and they're learning the creativity and the things that are very important for our students. You know, we often think about this idea of curiosity as well, and how students come to school with curiosity, and then we have a tendency to teach them how to do school, and we turn that curiosity off. And we want to nurture that mindset. So this is a very clear objective in PLTW, and certainly what I've written about, to make sure that students understand that these are very important skills, and it's the integration of things. It's not these subjects taught in isolation. It's not just learning to solve math problems, but rather it's how they apply to real-world problems.
We are talking with Vince Bertram about his new book, Dream Differently. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Charles has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Charles, welcome to the program.
Thank you. And Vince, I got on just a little late, and I obviously haven't read the book. It's just publishing today. But, you know, I'd like you to speak about this. It worked for me and others. And that's this aspect of having a mentor, and or if a person says to me, I don't know if I want to become a veterinarian or an MD. My response often is go hang out, go ride with a veterinarian, go to a small animal clinic, go to a general practitioner, go to a specialty MD and try to job shadow and understand. And they can be very candid with them as well and stretch and provide that perspective and breadth on what is needed. I loved your comment about the psychology thing, but I maybe you could speak to that and the success with that and influence on students as well.
Thanks very much for the call, Charles.
Yeah, Charles, thank you. Great points. So there are two areas closely related around mentoring. I absolutely believe that we've all, ideally, many of us have been influenced by mentors, and oftentimes it's not necessarily a formal relationship, mm-hmm. but just people that have inspired us and we've observed. And that's one of the things that if you go back to a caller a few moments ago talking about the role of the teacher mm-hmm. and just being great role models. So we want to influence students in many ways possible. I think it's ideal for students to reach out and connections to be made to create those mentors and mentorships. The other thing that I actually write about and devote a whole chapter to is the internships. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just very important even in high school and certainly in college, that students take initiative to pursue internships, whether they're paid, unpaid, it doesn't matter. They get in the workplace, they get experience, but they also then, I think, Charles, what you're alluding to is that they develop relationships and mentors that can help them. And in some cases, they decide that's not what they want to do. In other cases, it reinforces that they've made good choices while they're in high school or college to pursue certain industries.
We've got a question from a listener named Matt who did not want to go on the air. He's a restaurant owner, and he says that child labor laws often restrict young people who would like to work more and gain more hands-on experience from doing so. More ability to work can help kids learn what they enjoy doing and what may inspire them. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know that I have a strong position in terms of specific laws. I mean, I think what we have to do is to open as many possibilities to our students as possible. You look at a lot of, even when we have down economies, one of the things that tends to happen are older adults take on positions that are oftentimes filled by younger people. Mm-hmm. And you start to see teenage unemployment go up exponentially over time. It's happening here in the United States. It certainly happened around the world. In some places, we have the highest teen unemployment rate in history. You know, so I think providing those kind of opportunities, one of the things that I will touch on, Matt, that you bring up around child labor laws, I shared with a student recently. I said, you know, offer to volunteer. And I'm wondering if, you know, even within businesses and what those laws look like that will allow students to actually volunteer and just to be part of something. And would that encourage more employers to take on interns that may not come with credit, college credit or high school credit, but could really, really support their career aspirations? So those are things we all look at. But Matt, I really encourage you, if you have specific ideas, if you would send those to me, I would really like to take a look at those and see how we could start a conversation about some of the ideas you may have.
We are talking with Vince Bertram about his new book, Dream Differently, Candid Advice for America's Students. Got an email from a listener named Kathy. Kathy writes, I teach freshman biology at a high school where we also offer biomedical science, PLTW, that's Project Lead the Way. My students are excited to see the application of what we cover in our required course and to be active participants in their learning. No matter what course of study or profession students choose, we hope our goal is to have young adults who have strong critical thinking skills and understand how science works. These are decision makers and voters of the future. PLTW provides these skills that can be used in all areas of study. You like hearing that, I bet.
That was wonderful. Thank you very much for sharing that. And I agree. I think one of the things that was pointed out that I want to reinforce is that, you know, you think about the application of biology into a biomedical science course. Mm-hmm. And we really try to think we're very thoughtful about how we align programs and coursework throughout their experience so that the students see the relevancy of what they're learning in math and science courses and Project Lead the Way. One other thing that happened a couple of years ago is we create a partnership with the College Board to align advanced placement and PLTW. So we now have a national credential called AP plus PLTW. And the whole idea is that students would apply other content knowledge that they're learning into a PLTW classroom. So we're very excited about it. And again, thank you for the call. Thanks for being a teacher. And it's just such an important function of our society is to have wonderful teachers, great role models, people who are inspiring the next generation. And I'm just very grateful for everyone who, one, mentors our children, but also those who are teaching in our classrooms every day and really help prepare the next generation for a very challenging world, but one that they'll be prepared for.
We're getting close on time here. Is this the last book you're going to write, or do you have another one in the works right now?
I think there's probably room for another one coming.
Give us a taste, a theme maybe that you'll be working with?
You know, really, yes. I'm thinking more from a leadership perspective and what it looks like to be a leader in a community, not just by position or title, but rather by and through responsibility and shared responsibility.
Well, that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guest, Vince Bertram, for what's been a lively and informative conversation. Also, like to thank all of our listeners, particularly those who sent in questions or shared comments or stories. And I want to invite everyone back on Thursday when we're going to be talking with Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.